For the next hour, we'll be doing geek news and answering your questions and comments about technology.
Geek Speaks podcast and website are brought to you by GNI, a full-featured web hosting facility that provides co-location services and high-bandwidth connectivity. More information about GNI is available at www.gnihosting.com.
It's Friday, November 11, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast, and it's time for Geek Speak.
I'm Ira Glass, the host of This American Life. Our program is different than other shows on the radio. The kinds of stories we do are different, like little movies for radio, with characters in some situation, and funny moments, and more emotional moments, and unexpected plot twists. We spend a lot of time looking for stories and ideas you won't hear anywhere else. If you haven't heard us, I hope you'll listen this week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. right after Car Talk on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during our program are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today on Geek Speak, after a spot of geek news, we're taking your calls of questions and comments about technology. We don't have a special guest today. We just have some geeks in the room, and we're here to help. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about 15, 20 minutes, something like that. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for Netso.
This week.
Okay. Shifting his job responsibilities, and which means I think this will be the last time you're here with Geek Speak.
No, I think it might be on next week. I don't start until the 21st.
Okay.
But I am going to work for NVIDIA.
NVIDIA. The chip manufacturer.
Yes.
All right.
NVIDIA chip, motherboard. I'll be working for the platform side on Enforce chip.
We also have Josh Weiss, a personal geek, ready for rent or lease, correct?
And also the production and engineering assistant here at KUSP.
Yes, that's right. One of our own, if you will.
Indeed.
And we're having you guys experts on, let's be clear right off the bat. We're not going to do Macintosh calls today. I mean, I could handle Macintosh calls today, but I was listening to last week's show, and I was answering all these questions. And I want to hear from you guys, because you guys are experts. So we're going to take Windows calls, and we can have hard drive questions or anything, basically. But 10 minutes or so before we do that.
But you can always start sending emails.
Start sending emails now. Go to geekspeak.org. That's true. Click on Contact Us if you want to ask us questions. And if you want to ask us a Mac question, it's just burning. You're welcome to do so. I'm not going to, hang up on you or not answer your call. Okay, in any case, let's start with news now, though. Sean.
Yeah, I've got some stunning news. Some students at MIT have performed a study on aluminum foil helmets.
Good.
Using a $250,000 network analyzer, testing three different aluminum helmet designs.
Oh, there's different types?
They're different designs, yes.
Okay.
And they used a sample group of four individuals. They find that although on average all helmets attenuate invasive radio frequencies in either directions, either emanating from an outside source or emanating from the cranium of the subject, certain frequencies are in fact greatly amplified.
Oh no.
So this means that use of aluminum helmets may in fact enhance the government's invasive abilities. And there's now a theory that the government may in fact have started the helmet craze for this reason.
That's great. Does this article say what frequency is the amplitude?
Yeah. So a radio frequency test signal sweeping the ranges from 10 kilohertz to 3 gigahertz was generated using an omnidirectional antenna.
Okay.
Attached to an Agilent 8714 ET signal generator.
Okay.
And that's what they found. It enhances the signal.
But only in some frequencies.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it doesn't say what frequencies.
Well, you know, these amplified frequencies coincide with radio bands reserved for government use, according to the FCC.
Perfect. There's a lot of bands reserved for government use, of course. That's great, Sean. Thank you.
Of course, you know, if you get too much higher than that, you're going to be frying someone's brain. So, you know, there's only so many frequencies that you need to worry about before you don't have to worry about anything ever again.
Thank you very much. Josh?
All right, well, maybe not quite as stunning, but definitely cool. Sony is introducing new hard drives. These hard drives are 1.5 inches per side, the same size as a compact flash card that would go into your camera or, mm-hmm. or another mobile device. That's 5 gigabytes.
5 gigabyte. That's good.
That's a big size.
That's
pretty big.
Yeah, that's a lot of pictures.
Yes, it's a lot of pictures.
Or a lot of MP3s.
According to Sony, it is 1,600 3-megabyte digital pictures or up to 200 minutes of MPEG-4 video. So this is basically...
Minutes of video. Wow.
Yeah. This is being put out for the camera market for, you know, for still and for...
Yeah, sure.
And is this high video? Is this high speed?
Yeah, it's compatible. Yeah, it's going to be 12 megabytes a second. 12 megabits a second.
Is it compatible with Flash? Is it a Flash 2 card or a Flash 1 card? I'm assuming it is. Or
they're saying like that it can flash. Fit in an existing compact Flash Type 2 slot, whether that means it's actually compatible.
So maybe
or not,
no one's wrapped it up in a compact Flash.
Yeah, well, there's not much information out yet, but they're calling it the Compact Vault.
Uh-huh.
And if you go to the Sony website right now, there's just a homepage and there's no information.
You know, it's interesting. The mini hard drives for me, you can get 1 gig, you can get 2 gig flash cards.
Yeah.
They're fast.
Yeah.
And you're not going to drop them and destroy them. I remember when the flash cards first came out, you were able to get like 500 megabytes. It was like, whoa, get a card, get a hard drive like that. I had a friend who, it's light and small. It's like a match pack, So he kind of threw it on the table, and it destroyed it. These are hard drives.
This was a mechanical hard drive.
Right.
Yeah.
Same as this one that Sony has. It's a mechanical hard drive, correct?
Type 2, I'm guessing it is, because it's the thicker and all the rest.
Sure
are, the rest are type 2.
At that
two
size,
well.
Too. Well, in any case, maybe having five, gigs instead.
It's actually got a little platter inside and
a little tiny
moving head. It's just like a hard drive. Got to be careful how you handle those things. Hmm. It's kind of scary.
It is. Thank you, Josh.
But you know
that.
What? Even those USB, little device, you really can't call it a hard drive, but these USB memory devices that hold 1-2 gigabytes, I don't know if I would put that much on it.
Why?
They just don't seem like safe places to store data. Maybe to move data.
For moving data. Yeah.
Copying from one place to another, as long as you have a backup somewhere else. But
right. Yeah, no,
they're handy devices to hold data on, but I don't know if I would
rely on it.
Mm-hmm. You know?
It's more about transportation than
I think it is
permanent storage.
Yeah,
because you might fall into a swimming pool. Who knows? Then you're really just
or your hard drive could fail even inside your computer.
Having a backup solution might be a good way to go. Okay, anyway, let's go to the next news story, Sean.
So. This may sound crazy, but a San Diego company called Nethercom...
That sounds crazy. I'm sorry.
Well, it's what they're doing. They're working on wireband signals that can be run over natural gas pipes.
Huh?
We've heard about running, wireless.
Yeah.
Or not wireless. We've heard about running internet signals over telephone lines
mm-hmm.
and over your cable and over... water pipes.
They're going to do natural gas.
Now they're talking about natural gas. Yeah. So they claim the technology can offer 100 megabytes or 100 megabits per second to every home, which is more than enough to provide voice, video, high-speed internet access. But the claims have yet to be tested, and there's no working products. So there's a lot of talk about this. Thought I would mention it.
Okay, but, it's just...
I guess
the idea is that it's a better conduit than... normal piping in the house, because in piping you could have plastic in there. I mean,
yeah.
for water,
yeah.
but for natural gas, you have to have metal of some kind. Interesting.
We'll keep our eye on that and see where it goes. Kind of interesting for those people who are way out there. Who knows?
John?
So there's something cool happening with the Google Maps website. People are using the API of the Google Maps to make these mashups.
You gotta, people. If you haven't tried Google Maps, you gotta try it. It's really fun.
It's incredible.
I think it's just maps.google.com. But
yes, it is.
Yeah, that's correct.
It's a lot of fun. What are people doing with this?
Well,
API,
so they're doing
though?
These things called mashups, where they're basically using the API to do things. For example, this just came out recently. they're doing a mashup with the BBC World News. So in the Maplandia News Center, you'll find the most recent BBC World News stories plotted on a Google map. So you can basically just see the news on a map. And then it also links to the country where the story is taking place, so you can learn more about the region where it is.
Are the stories actually...
There's probably like a link to the
headlines?
Story.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a headline, and you know, it's just that same Google map with the little balloons.
Nice.
And the pinpoints on the map. This is pretty cool. You can see live bus positions in San Francisco. So you can get schedules, but you can also see using GPS where your bus is and when it's actually going to get there.
And they move
live
around.
And they move around.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, something else.
Wow.
In Seattle, you can appraise your home using Google Maps. You can pick a region and you can see up to 200 points on the map and how much they've sold for in the region. And there's.
So where are all these linked from? Are they all in one place? Are people.
Well, you know, happily, I didn't write down the website, but if you put Google Maps mashup into Google, the first thing that pops up is this great blog. This guy's posting a couple every day. There's just tons of these things.
When you're visiting Google Maps, don't forget to click on the buttons in the upper right-hand corner. There's a map button, satellite, and hybrid.
Right.
And the map button is, you know, it's a line drawing of the streets and so on. When you click on satellite, it turns into a full photographic picture of that area.
Yes.
So which is just kind of want to know what your house looks like from the sky. Go check it out. Go Google.
So you can't see the roof of your childhood home on Google.
I did that, actually. I lived back in Nebraska for a few years when I was a kid.
Did you find that?
Yeah, just on a lark I went, and wow, they did a lot of building. It took me a while, and then I realized that all the fields I used to play in are gone. All those cornfields.
You know, I'm grasping here for the maps with satellite and the aluminum hat. How to make that a joke, but I couldn't figure it out. So. Definitely try Google Maps. It's a lot of fun. Sean?
If you were worried about Palm abandoning the Palm OS, you need not worry because the CEO, I guess, who's been a little concerned about the number of posts suggesting that Palm is moving away from Palm OS to Windows, he decided to kind of let everyone know that Palm OS is not going away. He said, this is not a zero-sum game. This market is in its infancy. Which is interesting. I thought it was kind of on the decline. If we can expand our opportunities by being a strong class platform provider of world-class smartphone products, then we should do so. And, of course, he's referring to the new Windows-based Treo that was announced last month that companies have been going nuts over because, from what I understand, corporations don't want Palm devices. They want nice Windows devices that attach to their Exchange, you know, Outlook Exchange service.
Mail's the killer app still for...
Mail is the killer app for these handheld devices, yeah. Especially for calendaring, you know, making appointments, that sort of thing.
I got to say, I finally don't have a Palm. First time since, you know, Palm really started coming out that I didn't have one. And I'm using just a phone with Java in it. And I find it wonderful. It's got good syncing capabilities. It's got all the features I need. It doesn't have input, really, on drawing, stencil kind of thing. But I never really got into that anyway. Yeah. And so it's not a Windows device, and it's not a... a device of Palm. It's an Nokia product and it's Java based.
Right.
And how do you input? Just with the keypad?
I just sync, actually. I pretty much just sync to my computer and use the computer with the keyboard.
And so, can you read documents on it?
You can read Word documents and Excel documents,
really?
And you can do your calendar syncing and your note syncing and your contact syncing.
What's the application that the Word documents show up in?
It's a Word reader. There's a PDF reader as well. Mm-hmm. I don't actually do it. The Word and Excel and the PDF that come with the phone actually cost a bit of money to buy, and I haven't bought them.
Okay.
In any case, I'm wondering if the cell phone industry needs companies like Palm and Microsoft to provide operating systems. I'm seeing really good solutions from Nokia directly. In any case.
Okay.
Thanks for the story about Palm, though. I know a lot of people are very attached to Palm. They don't want it to go away, so it's a good thing. Josh, got another story, sir?
Indeed, I do. John Jacobs imagines he can bring more than $1.6 million a year in revenue, all from a $100,000 investment he made in a virtual property in the online game Project Entropia.
Uh-huh.
This is the same guy who sold an island in this game for $26,500 a couple years ago or recently.
I thought he bought an island. We had a story about this.
Well, he bought it and sold it.
He did sell it. Oh,
yeah, he sold it for $26,500.
Okay.
And he's hoping to make his money by opening up his new resort to lucrative hunting of beasts like kingfishers, vicious bird-like creatures that can easily kill players but that also sometimes drop armor.
We're basically talking about Project Entropia, which is an online multiplayer game which has an economy based on the U.S. dollar. So every $100 in the game, or every $10 in the game, is equal one U.S. dollar. And as you can put refunds in by just, you know, moving your money from your credit card into this game, and then your character in that game has money in the game, and they can do things. The interesting thing about the game, though, is that there's a whole economy in it such that if your character, or if you are good running your character, you can make more money than you put into the game, and therefore pull out cash.
Yeah.
So this guy has, he bought an island, and then he sold it, and making money actually from that transaction.
Yeah.
And he spent $23,000 on it and sold it for $27,000. I think that's about the numbers. And now he's bought a retreat. And these things that he buys is actually stuff the game developers create for people to buy. So,
and then people are bidding on them.
And then they're bidding on them.
And they want to bid.
And everything's on a bid market.
So crazy.
And he's basically saying here he thinks it's a better place to put his money than the real estate market because it's going to be more stable. And then it's safer, you know, and he's going to try and promote this resort by having real DJs to come in, and he pays them, you know, with money that he makes from the game. So he's just sort of reinvesting money that he makes inside the game.
We'll definitely
himself.
Keep abreast of that. The whole idea of having a complete economy in the virtual world is pretty fantastical.
And the fact of it actually being safer than the real market is...
It's like Snow Crash.
Is it safer than the real market?
I mean, that's just what he's saying here.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is,
the game developers might decide to make a storm happen and kill his retreat. I mean, it's a virtual world. I mean, they could do anything they want.
They're like God.
They are. Very much so, actually, in that world. Thank you, Josh, for that update on multiplayer games.
Sounds crazy, where fiction meets reality.
Yeah.
For real.
Or for fiction.
For fiction. Ah.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxel. We've got Sean and Josh, and we're doing news. In a little bit, we'll be taking your calls. We're doing Windows tech calls and Linux tech calls, right?
Yeah.
Windows tech calls.
Don't have Miles today.
Don't have Miles today, so let's not do Linux. And we're not doing Mac calls. But we're doing, you know, DSL and things like that.
Mac calls. We've got a problem.
Calls?
Just
all right.
You want to hear Lyle talk.
You can do it.
So
come
in
on.
About 10 more minutes, we'll do that. And the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877.
I think we're the only Windows owners in all of Santa Cruz.
Well, the thing is, you know, Macintosh is a very clean, smart, you know, it's an intelligent design. Oh, wait, that's the wrong term to use. Macintosh is a very good operating system. It's very clean and pretty and intelligent, right? Just like NPR. So that's kind of what's going on.
You know, I went to an Apple store the other day.
Oh, my gosh. What happened? What's the world coming to?
Well, you know, my wife's radio needed to be replaced. The battery died in the car, and when I replaced the battery, it set off the anti-theft system, and Honda won $100 to reset it. Can you believe that?
That's ridiculous.
She said, well, we'll just go buy an MP3, you know, deck. So I did that, and Best Buy was installing it, so I just walked over to the mall and walked by the Apple store and said, yeah, I'm going to go in there and check it out. And it is a pretty amazing store. I just can't get over how excited people in that store are. It's like they're overexcited. They're jumping up and down with technology. I just felt so out of place.
Oh, you're like, you never jumped up and down with technology?
Not like that. But I got to say, you know, I was looking at, if you look at the Mac store, external hard drive that connects through USB FireWire at like a Fry's for a PC. It's made of plastic and it's lightweight and cheap. When you go to the Apple store, it's made of some space like metal, and it's heavy and it's solid and it's like the same price. I would think, God, that is so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't carry it with you, of course, but you don't see that kind of stuff for a PC. It was kind of neat. The design is just amazing. But anyway, I was looking at the video iPod. I really wanted to see what that was like.
And
I just couldn't get over how thin it was. It's like a quarter inch thick.
Yeah.
And it's well made. I didn't realize if you use iTunes, when you download songs, you also get the pictures, and they're linked to the song.
Yeah.
So when you're listening to something, you can look at the cool picture of the album. That's kind of neat. And the guy said, you got to check out iTunes. And he gave me a full tour of it. And I got to say, it looks pretty interesting. But it's the video playback on these things. It's very pretty. And plenty of processing power. I was really worried. I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
So I played a bunch of different videos and seems to keep up with everything just fine.
And of course, it outputs to a television too, so you can use it as a portable.
No, I was really impressed.
What's the video format they're using?
It's MPEG-4 and some other.
They're using the codec
acronym. I can't remember.
I'm blanking on it.
I meant to learn more about it.
It's Apple's codec. It's, you know, the 802.11. No, sorry, that's wireless.
It's like two.
Totally blanking in my mind. Oh well.
But anyway,
they have DRM enabled on that.
No. Well, yeah.
They will.
They will.
Speaking of which.
But it was kind of cool technology.
Okay, let's talk about this, the geeky news that's been hitting, you know, national news. We're not breaking this story, but let's go into a little more depth than most people are doing. What's going on with Sony and digital rights and what they did to try to protect the rights of...
Well, it seems that if you purchased a Sony Music CD, and I don't know how long they've been doing this. I think people are still trying to learn what has happened.
We're talking about a lot of albums.
But there are a lot of albums from Sony. And if you put it in your computer, it actually installed files onto your computer.
So a music CD has also some data on it that
in the
installs
background,
in Windows.
It installed some files to support their digital rights management.
It didn't tell you about it.
Nope, not at all.
Well, don't they also make you use their media player? I think there's actually a Sony media player built into the discs that supersedes, you know, using Windows Media Player or Winamp. And that's sort of part of it, is they're locking you in because they don't want you to use a player that could let you output to an MP3
okay.
on your hard drive. So, you know, it's installing this, and it's installing this player.
And interesting. So they're calling it a Sony rootkit.
Well,
it's a rootkit that Sony is installing on your computer.
The reason being, what's a rootkit, Sean?
Well, they're cloaking technologies that hide files and registry keys from diagnostic and security software. And it's usually, these types of things are usually employed by malware. You know, this is software that is trying to get a hold of your system or take it over through nefarious means.
And they are to some degree trying to take over your system.
Yeah. So but what they're trying to do is prevent you from making copies of their software.
And I think that this information's actually been out for a while, that Sony did this. It's kind of, you know, in the realm of, like, public knowledge and of people doing, you know, owning their own content and being kind of aware of that stuff. People have been attacking this.
Right.
But it hasn't really hit main news because Sony's doing this, but it is their content. But one of the things that's really disturbing about that, in that same realm of, you know, what are you doing to my computer that, you know, crackers do as well when they're installing viruses.
Yeah,
and stuff.
So that's the problem.
Sony didn't put in a remove application. You didn't actually, normally if you go to a remove application.
They didn't disclose they were doing this.
Yeah, it's nefarious.
You can't install software on someone's machine without disclosing what that is and then hiding it from them.
Right. And then you can't uninstall it by going to the applications uninstall. So the big thing, though, that happened, this is the reason why it's really a serious issue, is that someone took advantage of this app.
Well, one guy figured it out using a rootkit revealer that Sony was doing this. And then, yes, other people said, someone's figured out someone's installed files on someone's machine. Through these files, they've opened a back door. I can write a virus now and attack people's computers using these files, and that's exactly what's happened.
Right. So basically, there's a security breach in the software that was installed behind the scenes by Sony that allows other people to take advantage of the machine.
Now, in the early days, well, when this first broke, people wanted to know, how do I uninstall it?
Right.
And the guy who figured out that it was even there, he did figure out how to install it, but it wasn't easy.
Right.
In fact, it locked him out of his computer at one point.
Well, wouldn't let him play CDs at all.
So this is kind of a major issue. And now that there are viruses linked to this rootkit from Sony, there are some removal tools, I guess.
Yes,
Josh, you know more about the viruses than
basically
talk about those.
This week they have discovered two Trojans that are just using the same things that Sony's using to hide its own files on the system. They're using the rootkit, and they're able to hide themselves on the system really easily. Yeah, antivirus company Sophos is calling them Stinks E and Stinks F. These are these first two Trojans that are linked to the Sony rootkit, and
so Sophos can remove them.
Sophos can remove them, and at the Sophos website, sophos.com/support, search for help on these stinks. There, you can now remove the Sony rootkit, but still play the content legally without breaking your computer, which is a nice thing.
Now that's an interesting thing. I mean, playing it legally—that's a question. I mean, the laws that are standing, Millennium Copyright Law,
DCMA,
one of them basically says if you try to disable the security features or the privacy features and the features about it, you're breaking the law.
Well,
and so if you're removing the application Sony put on your machine, is that breaking the law?
Well, there is a lawsuit now against Sony. So
maybe we'll find out.
That might supersede everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
because
if we can step back for a second, though, it's not actually taking this XCP software off the machine. It's just removing... It's removing the rootkit part of it, but it's leaving the actual software on. It's just not hiding the presence of the software.
And there was never no one ever went into a contract with Sony with this software. It's not like they went and bought this software or knew it was getting installed.
Right.
So I would say that there's probably some this probably some issue there with the fact that this is nefarious. This is not meant to be installed.
Yeah, but the thing is the copyright. I mean, well, Sony definitely is providing the content that is copyrighted, and they are providing software that's trying to protect that content from being duplicated and that kind of thing. If you disable that software, you're under violation of the law. So.
If there's a lawyer out there listening, I would love
to hear
your
legal on that. We had a big discussion last night on email about this, and we're like, can we get a lawyer in time for the show? And we decided not to try to push it.
So give a number here.
Well, let's do the whole little break thing. First off, we are taking calls right now. Phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We'd love to take your calls on questions and comments about, well, anything. But we're trying not to do Apple calls today. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Does one of you want to read the PSA?
Yes.
Okay, you get that ready. I'll do this. Support for this program comes from Metro Santa Cruz newspaper, including a complete calendar, club grid, and dining section, arts writing, and criticism. Metro Santa Cruz is available in Santa Cruz County every Wednesday.
Join KUSP weekdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. for The Open Road. The Open Road features roots music, hillbilly bop, a dash of blues, banjo, surf guitars, and more. Listen for giveaways, live performances by local artists, and visiting artists for a lunchtime treat. That's The Open Road, Monday through Friday from 11 to 1 here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. And do make sure to tune in today to hear Matt Pierce doing a great program just after us.
In about half an hour.
Yep.
You know, Josh, your voice is so gorgeous and you read so clearly. I should just stop reading this now. Let you do it. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. We have Sean Cleveland and we have Josh Weiss. Here, and we're taking your calls and questions of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or visit the internet, go to geekspeak.org. This program is supported by a grant from from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. All right. We've been covering news and such. Oh, yes, and I will start up my Yahoo Messenger so that Sean and I can chat through in the background.
We're getting some emails, get you all prepared for
emails
these.
Are good, and phone calls are coming in. And if you'd like to give us a ring, the phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We were talking about something before that little break. We were talking about the Sony thing.
Right.
So at this point, Sony has a removing tool?
Well, here's the point that I want to make, is that it's actually a Sophos thing. So, it's by the antivirus company. It's not by Sony. And it's not disabling the copy protection.
Okay.
It's just getting rid of the rootkit. So, I mean, they're going to now have this Sony program that they'll be able to know it's running on their box, but it's still copy protected.
Okay, but people keep on calling this a rootkit. It's not really a rootkit in as much as... I mean, that's a general term for things that allow you to do things in the background of your system. So basically, Sony installed an application. They made another application, which we're calling a rootkit, that hid that application's existence and its ability to be removed.
Yes.
The removal of that first piece doesn't infringe with the copyright, but it does remove the protection of the copyright software, if you will. So now a person is aware of it. So it still possibly could be an issue from the Digital Millennium Act.
But I mean, the reason the lawsuit is happening is because Sony didn't tell people they were doing this. Sony basically said, we are going to make your computer vulnerable. But you're not agreeing to this. You're just buying a CD.
Yeah.
You're not signing a contract saying, go ahead and make my computer vulnerable on the internet. You want to hear music.
I want a contract like that. We're taking calls now. Driving on the road, hopefully, Dimple, you've pulled over?
Hello?
Hello, Dimple. Welcome to Geek Speak. Have you pulled over your car on the road, or are you driving? We only take calls when you're pulled over. So we're going to have... You're going to have to pull over and call us back, okay?
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We just decided quite a while ago that when we do Geek Speak, we don't want to support the idea that you should drive with your cell phone. So if you do want to call us, we'd love to take your call. We'd love to take your email. But you can't be doing something like driving or, in fact, I don't really want you operating heavy machinery either. I think that would be a good thing while you're on the show.
It's hard to hear over jackhammer.
Yeah, no kidding. I think from Santa Cruz, Nancy? Oh, we lost Nancy. Maybe Nancy was driving too. Oh, well.
Scared her away.
Loma? Hello?
476-2800.
Yes, you have reached GeekSpeak.
Oh, yes. That's who I am trying to reach.
You are on air right now with GeekSpeak.
Okay.
What's your name?
My name is Christina.
Christina, hi.
From SoCal.
Okay, hi. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
And I appreciate your program very much. And I have a question regarding advice. What would you suggest for somebody who lives in an area with not great cell reception, who wants to get an all-in-one service as far as phone, internet, and the whole nine yards?
You want a cell phone and internet?
Yeah, well, basically what I'd like to do is get rid of my landline since it's out of commission a lot.
Mm-hmm. Where are you? How far away are you?
And I'm in SoCal Village, and I'm over Home Park. And we frequently lose our phone service here.
Oh, because of the mobile home park.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you got a situation in a mobile home park that there's a local phone service, if you will, that's just for the park.
And we're sort of in a gap for cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume that's going to get better eventually.
Can you get cable television?
No, well, we don't have cable here.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, I have no good news for you.
Oh, what is the future? You know, what should I aim for? I heard all these things about having online phone service.
Yeah, there aren't any services that give you everything yet.
But there are definitely phone services that will allow you to have a phone, or internet services that allow you to have a phone over your internet connection. But you've got to have a good internet connection for that. And the ways to get good internet, there's basically two of them. There's DSL and there's cable. And if you can't get cable, you've got to go DSL. And DSL comes on phone lines. So anytime your phone is lost, your DSL is lost.
That's pretty much it.
What about these satellite wireless internet systems? Do they have those down here on the ground, too?
You can do...
I don't know how voice over IP would be with a satellite connection, because there is some slowness that happens when you're sending your signal out from your computer.
Yeah.
Once you're receiving the signal, once that initiation has begun, everything's fine. But it's when you have to initiate new... Yeah,
satellite's not really the way to go. But
when the handshaking happens between the two, there is a slowness.
There is internet, stable location internet, I'm not sure what it's called exactly, point location internet service over wireless, where you've got a tower on a hill, kind of like a radio station situation, mm-hmm. and you can use your wireless from those two points, and you have to find a service provider that provides that. Because this area in general, like your neighbors outside that park, have DSL. Therefore, an internet service provider trying to get customers in that area is going to have a difficult time, because DSL is going to be cheaper than doing these kind of line-of-sight mm-hmm. STLs, if you will.
And the other thing is, you know, I'm not home a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a laptop computer. I usually check my internet away from home.
Right. Just frequent coffee shops. We've got a lot of coffee shops in Santa Cruz area.
Get a wireless in your laptop. And,
so I was thinking of getting
way.
A cell phone eventually. And doing
But a cell phone may be the way to go, yeah. For communications.
I wouldn't use your cell phone for internet service. It's
no.
You won't be able to do that. It'll be very difficult.
It's like using a traditional
and
phone.
And very costly.
Yeah.
It's very yeah, that's the other thing. It's just the landline is getting so costly.
Uh-huh.
I make a lot of calls to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, a lot of the calls to Europe are now to cell phones. And then when you call from a landline to a cell phone, it's an automatic, you know, $7 charge for
Right.
In call.
Europe, the caller always pays for the call. So a cell phone, if you call a cell phone in Europe, you're paying for the cell phone fees.
Right.
Yeah, I think that getting a cell phone would make sense. But if it's spotty in that area, I
Well,
don't
so
know
how about this?
That.
How about she gets a wireless card for her laptop? She gets a...
Yeah, which I have.
Well, and then if you get a headset, then you could go to a coffee shop and you could make phone calls
through
over the internet with a headset plugged into your laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what program do I need to get for that? Skype or
Skype would work, but the thing is, you're not going to have a phone unless you're at an internet connection.
Yes, but if she's making calls at least.
And you could of course go to my cousin's site. My cousin runs a voice over IP system, and they provide hardware solutions for this purpose. So you actually bring a real phone or an adapter for a real phone, plug in your remote.
You know, if it
laptop,
were me.
But,
I would complain to the mobile home park and to the phone company, because what happens if there's an emergency and
your
phone's down?
Oh, well, it happens
down?
Here. There's been winters that all the old people here have been out of electricity for like 6 weeks, 8 weeks at the time.
I say, you know what? You know who to call on this is find your Congress representative.
And all they ever do if we complain is raise our rent.
Oh.
So I'm just not there a lot, and I take care
I
of people.
I wish technology could help you, but it can't.
No, it's parts of this country are like living in the third world, so I just plan on being out and about a lot.
Yeah. I think that's the way to go.
And I want to have a very mobile setup.
Well, I think that if that's the case, if you're looking for that, then try a voiceover IP thing, voiceover IP. Basically, you can get this adapter that goes onto your internet connection on your computer, and then you've got to plug a normal phone into that. And wherever you go, that phone will be the phone that you use. And it's like $30 a month, something like that. We'll mention in a few minutes on air what that site is. Sean, if you could look up, it's on geekspeak.org. Actually, just go to geekspeak.org, click on the shows page, and maybe the archive, and then search down to voiceover IP, VoIP, a whole article on that.
Okay.
And good luck.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
NetVelocity.
NetVelocity. That's the one.
It's on our homepage. It's the third story, past show down. It's the third one down.
All right, we got lots of calls, so we're going to go ahead and go to Nancy in Santa Cruz. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, this is Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
Love your show. Glad you guys keep doing it.
Thanks.
I have a Mac, which is a PowerBook G4 running 922. I know I'll change sometime soon, but I'm wondering how I can get radio stations on iTunes. Right now I'm getting it through Real Player,
mm-hmm.
and the Real Player keeps cutting out every so often when they do their buffering or whatever.
And iTunes doesn't operate on OS 9.2, does it?
It does operate on 9.2, but you can only use library or disk.
Okay, well then the solution is very simple.
They also have stations that are already built in with the software, so you can click on any of those and get folk radio, say in New York.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, so here's the deal. The radio stations that are on iTunes are registered MP3 streaming solutions that people have registered through iTunes Radio. The radio station links that you find on people's sites, like on KOSP.org, our radio station link is not on that list on iTunes, but
right.
You can listen to it. So what you're saying is when you click on our MP3 link on KOSP.org, it opens in real audio. Is that
right.
The issue? Okay. So what you do is you hold down the control key on your keyboard and click on that link on our site that has the MP3 link. And when you hold the control down, a little menu will pop up, and you want to say copy URL or copy link.
Ah.
Once you've done that, then go to iTunes and say open. And paste that in there. Open stream. I think that's in iTunes. And paste that in, and presto.
Ah.
Good luck.
Yeah, great. Thanks very much.
You betcha.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're awesome, Lyle.
It is fun to be able to answer calls easily. I mean, that's nice. I didn't have to go into the whole thing of upgrade to OS 10, which, of course, is probably better. All right. We are going...
What does that cost?
I don't know what it costs.
No, we recommend these things.
Do this.
That costs $9,000.
Sorry, yeah, I don't know how much it costs. I don't think it's that expensive.
You got 98? You got to upgrade to XP.
Right. Windows 98, right.
Forget that it's $300 and something.
And, of course, we're always slamming Microsoft, saying it's a bad company. Yeah, you got to upgrade. But it costs $200.
I don't think they're a bad company.
No?
Although we do have an email. I want to cover this email,
okay.
Which is interesting. It's about Microsoft.
I've heard of them.
Microsoft has been, this is from Jeff of Santa Cruz, Microsoft has been declared a monopoly, yet we continue to see them dominate the marketplace with no regulations. A debate that is non...
But they're not a monopoly.
A database that is non-Microsoft can take 10 times more connections, yet business continue to buy it because of the user base, which is a large...
Yeah, you're talking about like Microsoft.
How long do users need to suffer because of this lack of competition in the market? Viruses, hanging, crashes.
Long time.
You know? When are we going to solve these problems?
It's
a good question.
Without
you know?
These problems, we wouldn't have anything to talk about.
Supposedly, Microsoft is going to be focusing on these issues with their next version of their operating system,
yeah.
Which will cost you XXX dollars.
So the basic point is Microsoft is, everyone knows it's a monopoly, and yet we're not seeing any legislation, if you will, to restrict its control and everything on the internet or on your computer. But the thing is, there are competitors to Microsoft. They're out there. Everything Microsoft does, somebody else does. So the issue is not really that they're a monopoly and that they have no competitors. The issue is that because of the way computers work, where once you start using one piece of it, all those other things work better. That's the thing that's slamming. That's the thing that's making them so successful.
Yeah, it's really tough. People have large investments in software.
Yeah.
That's
well, here's
one of the
I mean, here's
issues.
Things we recommend like right away to remove Microsoft's monopoly, if you will, don't use their web browser. Use Firefox. It's free, and if you're on Windows, you can use it. Go to Mozilla.org and download that. That's one step. So it's a you're empowered with the technology.
And you found a way to block IE browsers recently.
Yeah, you can detect IE browsers through scripting. And one of the movements on the web right now is to get rid of IE completely because of its standards in compliance.
So if you go to a website and you're using IE and it tells you, you're using IE, you can't view this website, you need Mozilla Firefox.
Yeah, we were tempted to put it on GeekSpeak, but I don't think I will.
Kind of like when you go to a Windows
then,
update.
Then you
yeah,
will,
when you go to Windows update, and it says you need Internet Explorer.
Yeah, that's the reason back. Why, yeah.
All right, we're going to go on to calls. This is GeekSpeak. Hola? I'm guessing on your name, so go ahead and talk to me.
Olam.
Hello, welcome from Atascadero. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Right, good morning.
Good morning.
My question is about Zone Alarm. Is it a good program for firewall?
Yes.
Zone Alarm's a really good program for a firewall. One thing you've got to know when you use it, don't be stressed about everything. It's blocking things that most of the time it blocks stuff that you don't really want blocked. But you'll be surprised how much you'll be aware of what your system's doing. Your computer's doing things in the background all the time, and Zone Alarm's going to tell you all about it.
But also, keep in mind that when you install Zone Alarm and some of these newer type of firewalls, it's not just going to work automatically for you. You've got to train it. So every time a pop-up comes up and tells you that an application is trying to access the Internet, you've got to think about that. Does this application really need access?
Mm-hmm.
And you can block it, which is really nice. But if it's your browser, you don't want to block that,
right?
Or else you can't surf the web. So you got to, as you train it, it really becomes more powerful.
And there is a small caveat to that. If you buy Zone Alarm, rather than getting the free version, they come with sort of a pre-trained version.
Uh-huh.
I haven't used it yet, but I know. I mean, because if you get the free one, you know, you'll spend some time every time you open a new program and it goes on the Internet. You'll have to tell it. Either you want to allow this or deny it.
And you want to say allow, and you want to check that checkbox if you know that you want to allow it, so that it always allows it. But what are you saying, Josh?
I mean, I'm just saying that if you buy the program, it sort of comes pre-configured for a lot of the applications
you're going to
use.
Yeah.
It's already going to know like which ones are good.
Mm-hmm. It will let your mail
And
client,
the full version has antivirus as well. You may or may not need that. But the free version on the web, very powerful and very
nice. And
it works
fine.
Yeah.
Is it on a yearly basis? I have to keep buying it every year?
Really, the free one's fine. I just offered that as a...
Right. Yeah, you can use the free one. Just the thing that Josh is basically saying is when you install a firewall like that, you've got to train it, which means that don't ignore those things and just say disallow, or your computer will stop working. You've got to train it effectively.
And if you accidentally click on the wrong button, don't worry. You can always go into the interface and change it.
That's true. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. From Santa Cruz, Brad, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, thanks. On the heels of the last call, the Sony, I guess, has some CDs out, that music CDs, that have some phone home capability, which is they contact Sony and give them your IP number and things like that.
No, I mean, they do have some capabilities built into their CDs that we don't like.
We just covered this in our news segment about 15 minutes ago. But no, it's okay. One of the things that you're saying is that Sony software that we're talking about that's installed in the background and it's kind of hidden and it's not it's kind of nefarious is contacting Sony. To our understanding, no, it is not doing that.
Oh, okay.
But it is doing other things.
It's only making it hard for you to copy CDs, and it's also providing some...
Yeah, because I read it in the newspaper, and I knew it was 10 o'clock on Friday, so I called up. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for calling up and addressing that part of the issue with Sony's
management. Well, system. It's sort of scary because, with all the, things like black box voting and all these things, you just don't know what's going to happen.
And that's, it goes right in line with voting machines. You don't know the insides. And this is the entire movement behind open source addresses these issues.
Yeah.
People should not be able to make software that you don't know what it's doing because of the reliance we now have on computers. It's not a fair trade, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what the movement's saying, and definitely in voting systems, but also in rights management. If somebody's going to have a system in place that restricts your ability to manage the stuff you've bought, under the guise that information is protected under copyright, they need to be doing it in the open. They need to tell you about it. So thank you very much for the call.
Sure thing. Bye.
Bye-bye. I kind of felt like I was on a soapbox there. I liked it. Felt all powerful. People are listening. from Santa Cruz, Brant, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, my gosh, I'm on here.
You are. You've never been on air before, have you?
I just never know what it sounded like from this end. First a comment about the whole Sony BMG digital rights thing.
Mm-hmm.
What makes that thing so nasty is they're redirecting system-level kernel calls, which actually is interfering with your own operating system that you already paid for.
Yeah.
That's to me the big problem, and the fact that it's easily exploitable. I didn't hear your newscast, so I don't know whether you talked about the fact that hackers in England have already started exploiting the rootkit that the Sony puts in.
We didn't say it was in England, but yes, we did address that.
Okay, good. So here's the main reason for my call. What do you know about hot swapping USB devices and blowing up motherboards?
Yeah, ooh. Don't do that. Don't. I think the second part of that, blowing up motherboards, is a bad thing to do.
So what? Okay.
Does this happen to you?
Did this happen?
Well, Josh, you kind of know some of this, but the bottom line is we've been experimenting with some USB extenders and things like that.
Oh. And these are powered extenders?
Yes.
Huh.
And one is powered, and I think the other one is non-powered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the non-powered one that we're kind of suspicious that it might have actually fried one of the ports on the motherboard.
First off, let me just say, Brant is the engineer here at KUSB. That's why we're so in aware of who he is. And he was the one that addressed the Sony issue with us, and that's why we started talking about it today. So thank you for calling in, Brant. And
Brant, the
USB issue.
Is this on the server? The video server?
This is actually on one of our audio computers.
Okay.
Is it an older system?
Brand new.
Huh.
Asus motherboard.
What are you connecting through the USB? Are you connecting a hard drive or a
CDRW?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't suggest doing that on a non-powered USB hub.
I wouldn't suggest doing it on a USB hub at all. I think it's not a good thing to do.
No, USB hubs are fine. But you're connecting large devices.
But you need a 2.0 powered.
They really need to be powered, yeah.
How much were these things? Are they cheap?
The ones we're using right now were like $600, but we don't think those are blowing things up.
Right.
The cheap one we bought, I don't remember. I think it was around $200.
But if we back off for a second, there was nothing actually plugged into the extender when said event happened.
Right.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
Did you smell anything?
We didn't smell anything.
So what? How do you know it's blown? It just doesn't show up anymore?
Yeah, because the computer broke.
The computer broke?
You mean you plugged it in and it broke the computer right then? Or?
Well, we're not sure. That's what we're a little scared of.
Oh, okay. Goodness.
Well, so have you been able to boot the machine again, or is it totally not working?
No.
Well, we had to ship it back to the factory.
Oh. Well,
I guess in kind of a general way, I mean, I was under the impression that the USB spec was like, I'm supposed to just be able to be dumb and stupid and unplug things at will.
Yeah, you should not have this kind of a problem.
You've never had this kind of problem. No.
Okay.
You didn't do anything wrong. The thing with powered USB hub, I mean, non-powered USB hubs, we're basically talking about something that we plug in your computer and then you have a whole bunch of ports.
Yep.
The power off of that thing is all from that one port.
Right.
So if you put a lot of load on it, even the device itself, running its lights and stuff, is load on your computer, so it's not really good.
That shouldn't break it.
That shouldn't break it. Then the only thing I can imagine is that something was wrong with the chipset on that machine, the version or something like that. There's something wrong with it. I mean, my personal machine has a problem with USB. If I plug a USB keyboard, for example, when I boot, it won't go through the boot cycle. It just doesn't function. So those USB ports have to be not used. And the reason is that the motherboard was kind of a before full production motherboard, and that's why it doesn't work. But I can imagine that you've got it was a malfunctioning motherboard, and you found the flaw that it had. I think that's what I'm going to go with.
That's probably what's going on. Yeah.
I'm hoping that's what they find at the factory when they work on this thing. But
They'll blame you, of course.
What's that?
They'll blame you, of course.
Oh, no. They've already decided it's not our fault. Okay. All right, thanks, gentlemen.
Asus is a good company. Yeah, they make great boards.
All right, thank you, Brant, for the call, and thanks for being such a great supporter of KUSP, of course. We're going to go to Santa Cruz. Todd, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Hello, you're on GeekSpeak.
Great. You guys are awesome. Love you guys.
Thanks.
I got a couple questions for you. The first one's just around virus protection.
Can you pick up your phone, please?
I have picked up my phone.
Okay.
I'm holding it.
Okay, it's very echoey. But go on, virus protection. Shoot.
Maybe.
We're right here.
Know, it's my voice over IP, probably.
Nice.
I actually love it, but every once in a while, people on the other end tell me funky things about it, like that it's not sounding right.
This is really cool. Okay.
Like my cell phone.
AT&T.
All right. So virus protection for the Mac.
Virus protection isn't necessary. I hear all of these opinions, but I value your guys' opinion.
On the Macintosh?
Yeah.
Nah.
It's not even necessary because I have a firewall with my airport, so I just don't even need it.
Okay, so here's the deal with viruses on the Macintosh. There aren't any yet. None's been released into the wild that has taken over on machines. Therefore, any virus...
Everybody's susceptible.
That's right. Everybody's susceptible. But therefore, if someone does do a virus on a Macintosh machine and it starts spreading over the Internet, the best way it would do that is that it was like a virus that ran on both platforms. That's the way it would work. But in any case, let's say a virus spreads on the Internet and it can hit Macintosh computers first time. The virus definition library that you have in your computer won't recognize it because it'll be brand new. So the only thing that you're going to be doing is when the virus hits, you need to somebody needs to write some protection for your computer, and then you need to be subscribed to that protection. That's what virus protection software is about.
Right.
Right.
The issue is when a Macintosh virus hits, as soon as it hits, it's going to be all over the news. It's going to be the biggest thing at Mac Story out there. You're going to hear about it so much, and you'll be like, oh, what should I do then? So it's not one of those situations where there's one every day. So therefore, don't worry about it until you hear that news story. That's
my take on it. Think of all the time I've wasted downloading and installing virus protection every month.
That's why you spend so much on your computer, because that way you don't have viruses. That's the Mac thing, you know.
Awesome. I got another question for you guys.
One more, man.
About PIMs, personal information managers. And do you recommend one? Because I have all these different databases and they just don't talk to each other. You know, Entourage is what I use for my mail. There's Yahoo, FileMaker Pro. Address book, and
I'd say the biggest frustration I have with computers right now is personal information management. Like, for example, I've got a great calendar system. I love it. My work has a calendar system I have to use. That's two. I want to share my calendar with my friends and especially my wife so that I'll know her appointments. The software out there exists. I mean, the concepts exist. It's easy to do this, but no one's packaged it.
Very frustrating.
It. And so one of the big things that's hit, and this is it, the solution, if you will, the same people that did web dev, which is sharing content over the web both directions, are doing a thing called calendar dev.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be an open standard, if you will, for sharing calendar information. Now, it's not all personal information, but it's part of it. So once you get enough of these standards and all the applications use it, you've got the solution. But right now, you don't have one.
That's what I thought. All right, well, thanks for your opinions.
You bet.
They're valuable, and I just can't believe how...
There needs to be something
and
done.
We have so
people
many
still
opinions.
Carry notebooks around at offices.
Yeah.
You know, and they scribble phone numbers and stuff in there. And I mean, like notepads with pen.
Right.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I use paper because nothing will talk to each other, and it still seems more efficient.
Yeah. 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 People have notebooks, and you have
a
desktop computer. How do you sync the two? How do you sort that information?
Todd, please do call again. You're great. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
I'm stuck sending email to myself to handle this problem.
We're not, unfortunately, able to take Fred about Final Cut Pro. If you'd like to stay on the phone or call back in about 10 minutes, I'll take you off air. Because we're running out of time on GeekSpeak.
We should maybe talk about personal information software, you know, management software.
It is a big issue.
Maybe we should talk to some of these people and see if there's anything
some
out
experts,
there.
Some experts, if you will, that migrate all
some
of
them. Some solutions, possibly, to this issue.
GeekSpeak is proudly sponsored by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering color printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com. Thanks for joining us on GeekSpeak. We're out of time, as we always are at the end of the hour. The Geeks this morning with Sean Cleveland and Josh Weiss. And thank you to Rick Philman, who's our phone answerer, a very busy guy today with all the phone calls. And thank you for all of you for participating in GeekSpeak.
Thank you, Lyle.
To those
thank
that
you,
called
Lyle.
In, and for listening to GeekSpeak and to call into GeekSpeak, thank you for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that? I want to address what we're going to be talking about next week briefly. We're going to be talking about some Adobe products, Adobe Photoshop, not Photoshop itself, but Elements, Photoshop Elements. And basically, I've used Elements recently, and Adobe sent me a copy of it, and I think that you could use Elements as your main Photoshop or main editor of photos and not need Photoshop. I'm kind of in the situation where, and this is a big thing for me, that you might not need to buy that expensive Photoshop application and just use Elements. So next week we're going to address that a little bit. We're also going to have an author on about professional Photoshop retouching. So he's going to be an expert in Photoshop. We're going to have somebody on from Adobe talking about Photoshop Elements and Premiere Elements. And that'll be the show next week. Josh, Sean, did you have something real quick you want to say?
Yeah, real quick. Somebody ran into that USB problem at Sun, and they found that the ground pin does not connect first, on connect, or disconnect last could be a problem.
Hmm.
So if your device is not certified for hot swap, turn off the power. So make sure. But these are $100 device, you know.
Yeah. So this would mean if you look at the USB connector, make sure that the shield that's on the outside is a little bit bigger and try to make it contact first.
Right.
Well, I mean,
the point was this was a mistake that we did. We weren't trying to hot swap.
Yeah, you weren't trying to. It just unplugged it. Yeah.
Yeah, or I didn't, but someone did.
Oh, someone did. That's a good one. I got to remember that.
At least when the boss is listening to the radio.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This program is sponsored by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 28 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com, 2808 Soquel Avenue. Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz, KBH, San Otto, on the web at kosp.org.